Brad Sessmann Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good morning, all persons, and welcome to the Thursday edition of the Brad Sessmann Show. I've kind of lost it. The lights are... Oh, there's the camera. Hi there. I'm Jeff Munn for Brad. Brad is off today, and you might have... Monday, I know Brad brought this up, and I have no... pardon me for... there, that's better. First of all, I'm the radio voice of ASU women's basketball, stadium announcer for Phoenix Rising FC, and I just go wherever the calendar tells me to go most days. And today I'm here, and I'm glad to be with you. Brad mentioned this Monday on the show that he's going to get both his knees replaced. Wow. So I may pop up here a little bit more often than I have in the past, and I'm always glad to do so because it gives me a chance to come and talk sports with you and with our plethora of guests. And today's one of those days is really going to be a lot of fun because we get to talk baseball with ESPN baseball insider Pedro Gomez. And obviously, the mystery or the intrigue of the Diamondbacks continues to grow as they continue to win games. And they're in the midst of the wild card race. But there's an added wrinkle this year that I want to talk to Pedro about, and it's this singular trade deadline in baseball this year. July 31st is it. After the 31st of July, you can't make a trade where the player goes through waivers. You can't do it in September. That's it. And I think it is really hampering a lot of teams' decision-making ability. And I think the Diamondbacks are one of those teams that is really struggling with it because they can't, you just can't come to a conclusion. Are we in this? Are we not? Et cetera, et cetera. We'll talk about it with Pedro coming up. AZ Central, Gannett chief film and media critic Bill Gutekunst will be here. A couple of interesting things in local media this week. James Quiñones, very quietly, I mean really quietly, left Channel 12 after a long run. And the story that has made the rounds in the media in town about the situation involving Kerry Lake at Channel 10, and we'll discuss it with Goody from a number of different angles. I mean, I'm really looking forward to discussing this with him. But obviously, a lot of other things on my mind, including what I did last week up in Las Vegas, Nevada, and we'll talk about that a little bit. Joining us, and watch carefully now, ladies and gentlemen, if you're watching online, he's going to emerge out of the upper right-hand corner. I'm looking up at my monitor to make sure that he's there. Oh, they went split screen on me. It's Eric Sorensen, ladies and gentlemen. Hi there, E.
Hello, Mon.
How are you, sir?
Doing great. How are you today?
I'm well. You were getting badgered pretty good on Monday's show. I haven't got a chance to check out what you guys did Tuesday and Wednesday. But the Monday show, Brad was beating you up pretty good.
Yeah, it's kind of par for the course around here.
No.
Especially because he and I hadn't seen each other in like 3.5 weeks due to conflicting schedules, me being up in the middle of nowhere in northern Arizona, him traveling to and from California to watch water polo. So
you've got a big feature coming. I know it's still kind of in the works.
Oh, it's definitely still in the works.
Yeah. You were up in Ash Fork, basically kind of in an all-access kind of deal, right?
Yep. I went up there with South Mountain High School, spent 5 days last week in Ash Fork, and piecing together my second summer documentary. Last year I went to California with Saguaro, and this year
I went to
Ash Fork with South, and... I love the documentaries. They just take a lot of time.
They are.
And
but
Devin Henry
but what
did a great one, and he can relate that it takes. They
it does
take
a lot
they
of work.
Take weeks to put together.
Yeah,
but I'm
it does
excited.
Take a lot of work.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you. Let's get. I'll tell you what. Don't go anywhere. Like you were gonna leave.
I'll be right here in this little box.
Thank you. I want to get right into the news of the day, and it's brought to you by Sagicor Now. And Brad will talk a great deal about that ever-present question: what would happen to you if? And that's a question that is dads, but moms included. You have to think about. And I've heard radio commercial. I heard a really interesting radio commercial for a life insurance company. And the guy was saying, oh, I can't stand talking about life insurance. It's not that bad. And especially if you deal with Sagittarius now, they'll take a lot of the discomfort level, for lack of a better term, out of the process. Because what they do really well is they answer your questions. And as I always say when I fill in here for Brad, Sagittarius now, what you're really getting from Sagittarius is peace of mind. You can't put a price tag on that, and it does give you peace of mind. So I hope if you haven't done it already, now would be a good time to log on to Sagittarius now, find out everything that they can do to provide you with peace of mind, and we thank them for being part of the Brad Sesmat Show. Another win for the D-backs last night in Arlington over the Texas Rangers. I believe this is the last year of Globe Life Park in Arlington. I've been there a few times. It is, man, is it, it's miserably hot in that place. It's a nice ballpark. It's just hot, and it's, they don't have a roof, and it's a little tough to sit through games there. But the D-backs unloaded last night. I always remember something that Jim Brock, the late Jim Brock, said to me when he was the baseball coach at ASU. In 84, they go to the College World Series, and they score 23 runs against Oklahoma State. And the next day, the very next day, they got shut out by Texas. And he said, sometimes, you know, he said, in a given season, the baseball gods allot you a certain amount of runs, and we used all our remaining supply up in one game. And I thought about that when I saw that the D-backs beat the Rangers last night 19-4. There's been a lot made of the statistic run differential, and the D-backs are like plus 70-something in run differential. That's terrific. I have to remind a friend of mine all the time that baseball is not football. Beating a team by four or five touchdowns in football is pretty impressive. It doesn't mean as much in baseball when you beat a team by 10 or 11 runs. I always say, you show me the team that performs the best in games decided by one run, and I'll show you a championship club. And the D-backs' record in one-run games has not been as strong as a plus, I think it's a plus 71 run differential would tend to indicate. But they did get two wins in Texas. They go 3-2 on the road trip. Now they come home tonight for a homestand. I mean, if you look at their immediate schedule, it's not all that daunting. Four at home with the Brewers, who have had kind of an up-and-down year, hanging in the Central, very much in the discussion in the wild card. Then they have Baltimore. Then they go on the road, and a road trip back east starts with four at Miami. And so you think to yourself, okay, well, now we've got a stretch of games that are going to take us right up to the deadline. And, Eric, if you want to jump in on this, feel free, where the D-backs can get on that long-awaited run that everybody has been waiting for them to get on, including their general manager. And maybe by the time we get to July 31st, the D-backs will be in New York playing the Yankees then. Maybe at that point, they'll be able to make a decision once and for all. Are we buyers or are we sellers? But I mentioned Nick Pecoro did a really interesting piece the other day in The Republic. And what he basically said was, even if the D-backs are in the race, they should still consider the being sellers, because they've got to look at the big picture. You've got a farm system that, yes, they had a large amount of draft picks this June, early in the draft, but it's still a farm system that's not ready to contribute to the 25-man roster. Their first-round pick from 2 years ago, Pavin Smith, is at AA. Most of the scouting reports are not very positive about his development as a player. They didn't sign their first-round pick in 18. So this farm system is still a little bit away. They don't have a player in the top 50 in MLB's top 100 prospects. They need to bolster this farm system. If they don't pay attention to this, the whole thing's going to collapse on them, much the way it did in Houston around 2010. And I think Mike Hazen understands that. But it's also an equally difficult sell to your fan base if you're a half game out of the wild card, the second wild card, which they are right now. How do you sell it to your fan base that we're going to consider trading Robbie Ray, David Peralta, Adam Jones? There might even be some offers for Greg Holland. How do you explain that to the fans? Yeah, we're a half game out of the second wild card, but we've got to start unloading guys. But if you think about it, in long term, form, they have to think that way. And it's to me, this singular trade deadline of July 31st is really hurting the Diamondbacks and a number of other clubs who are in that group of teams. Here's something that's just staggering to me. The Marlins are 12 games out of the second wild card. Everybody else is a maximum 5 games back. The Reds are 5 games out of the second wild card. It's really making things dicey. We'll discuss it with Pedro coming up. Cardinals rookies gather to start workouts in Tempe. At training camp, of course, will be in Glendale. Not much new to report on the Suns front. They had their big press conference a couple days ago. I do want to give some express some thoughts about the news last week that we might see ASU and Grand Canyon University meeting in athletics. Well, we will coming up in the next probably this spring. But I want to share some thoughts on that. And I want to talk about being up in Las Vegas last week at the NBA Summer League. I was just astonished at what I saw, not on the court. What I saw in the stands outside the building was just, it proves once again, the NBA is just a step ahead of everybody else when it comes to marketing. And boy, it was never more evident to me than it was last week at the Thomas and Mack Center at UNLV. So we've got a lot to get to, including a visit with our friend Pedro Gomez. Who was the one behind this singular trade deadline? And is it really hurting the D-backs and a few other teams? We'll discuss it with Pedro coming up next. Bill Gutekunst later on. We've got a fun show ahead. Stick with us here. The Brad Sesmatch Show, sports360az.com. On a Thursday, the Brad Sesmatch Show, Jeff Munn for Brad. Glad to have you along. And let's talk a little baseball, as we do whenever we get the chance to visit with our ESPN baseball insider, Pedro Gomez. Full disclosure, you're in town, right?
I am actually in Tempe doing an NFL assignment today as well as yesterday. I'm at just at rookie camp here in Tempe at the Cards facility. There's no access, but we still managed to get some information and
well, there you
some
go.
Hits.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, let's since they're not giving out information there, let's talk about baseball stuff. Before I get into talking about the D-backs, Pedro, give me some background, because I admit I'm not certain of the particulars. Whose idea was it to go to this singular trade deadline, and what's the point of it?
Well, the point is to avoid the fact that there are two deadlines rather than just one hard deadline. So both the players as well as management thought that there was a little too much stress for the player. The Players Association thought there was too much stress on the other side, so they wanted to get rid of the August portion of the non-waiver trade deadline, where you could still, or the waiver deadline, I'm sorry. Because in years past, by July 31st, anybody could be traded for, you know, at any point, as long as they didn't have no trade clauses, things like that. And you could still make trades from August 1st until August 31st and have those players eligible for the postseason. This year, however, they made July 31st the hard deadline. You can still make deals into August, however, it cannot be anybody on the 40-man roster of a team. So therefore, that kind of eliminates any star being traded in the month of August. And let's not forget, Justin Verlander was one of those that went in August
right.
A couple of years ago to the Astros. So you can make blockbuster deals into August, but starting this year, that will not be allowed.
I just, as a little comment moving forward, I know that for casual fans, it was always kind of weird in August. Most teams would put the majority of their 25-man on waivers, which was kind of a procedural thing, and you'd see big names
correct.
On the waiver wire, and like, my goodness, they're waiving Albert Pujols. But that was part of what, and the other thing, and you and I both remember this, 2010, the Padres and Giants were in a heated battle for the NL West title, and the Padres really wanted to get Cody Ross from the Marlins. The Marlins put him out on waivers. The Giants put in a claim to block the Padres from getting him. They won the claim, so they got backed into having to trade for Cody Ross, and all Ross did was win MVP honors in the NLCS that year. So there are instances where that August waiver trade period can really help a club, and I'm for one, as a fan, I'm sad that it's gone.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is gone. But again, I think they wanted to just set, like every other league has, there's just one trade deadline in order for players to be eligible for the postseason, and that's what baseball has decided to do, and I don't see it going back the other way. I think this is going to be the future.
I know that part of what we're dealing with right now is a product of the season itself, where you've got this group of, 10 teams within 5 games of the wild card in the National League. But I really think going to this July 31st singular deadline is really putting a group of teams, it's painted them into a corner, and the D-backs are right in that group because they simply cannot come to a conclusion, are we buying, are we selling, and the clock's ticking. And I almost think, Pedro, and I want to know what you've heard, that Mike Hazen might be at a point where he's saying, we're not going to do anything because we can't afford to make a mistake.
Well, and then Mike Hazen's not alone in that mentality. I think Jeff Breidich in Colorado's falls into that group. I think Mike Mozeliak in St. Louis falls into that group. You've got teams that they don't know. Are we going to be in the hunt in August and September, or are we going to fade? And it does put a lot of pressure on GMs. And what I'm hearing is that only the division leaders are being really active in the trade market because they know for not a certainty, but they have a pretty good idea that they're going to reach the postseason. So therefore, they're willing to step up and, hey, we're willing to make a deal. Now you need two to make a deal, obviously. And, you know, if a club is looking for a Robbie Ray, a division leader might very well say, yeah, we're interested in Robbie Ray. But like you just mentioned, Mike Hazen may say, well, we're going to have to hold. We're going to have to hold our cards and see what happens, but we're not going to trade him. Or you get a GM who says, you know what, this is kind of fool's gold. We aren't as good as we think we are. Why are we going to put everything into the possibility of maybe reaching a one-game playoff, being done after one game, and we missed an opportunity to maybe improve ourselves for 2020 or 2021 with a deal that could definitely help us. And that's where, you know, the GMs are going to make their money. That's why they're being paid, to make those decisions.
I thought Nick Pecoro wrote a great piece earlier this week on AZ Central, basically explaining that point. And he still contends the D-backs should sell, not so much and because he's looking big picture. But it's true, and I know you and I both know there are people in the D-backs front office that they won't sell right now because how do they get up and explain to their fan base, we're a half game out of the second wild card, but we're shipping Robbie Ray out, or we're taking offers on David Peralta. That's you and I both know there are a couple people in that front office, they don't want to do that.
Well, and there's the one most important, which is Ken Kendrick, the owner. He does not like to wave the white flag at all. And, you know, his vote carries more clout than anybody else's vote when it comes to making these kind of moves. But conversely, you look at a few years ago, the Detroit Tigers, and look, the Tigers are not having a good season at all. But if you look just below the surface at their pitching in the minor league level, where they have Casey Mize from Auburn, they've got Alex Fiedo from Florida, who are probably 1 to 2 years away from being on the big league roster, they could very easily be turning things around in a big way in a short amount of time. But don't forget that just a couple of years ago, they went and said, J.D. Martinez, you know, we're trading you. Justin Verlander, we're trading you. You know, two of the cornerstones of that franchise, because they knew they were going to suffer anyway. They weren't going to win with those guys. Yeah, they were going to win more games than they would normally, but they weren't going to be in a position to truly win and contend for a World Series. So they decided to bite the bullet. And yeah, they're suffering right now, but they could very well be in contention in a year or two, especially in the division they play in.
Well,
the other thing you have to look at, yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Pedro, I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was going to say that the other thing you have to look at if you are Mike Hazen or anybody in the NL West is, you know, the Dodgers are a monster. They've got unlimited wealth. They've got such a young roster. Their minor league players are stars for the most part. They've got, you know, a couple of guys rated in the top 50 in all the minor leagues, shortstop named Lux, a catcher coming up. If you're the Diamondbacks, do you really look and say, we can win the NL West in 2 years? I don't know that the Dodgers are going anywhere. So maybe you have to retool and really fortify yourself in order to make a run at the Dodgers.
Well, the other thing, and we're talking with ESPN baseball insider Pedro Gomez, and I always enjoy these chats, Pedro, because they're not really interviews. It's just like you and I are sitting around having a cup of coffee. The other thing about the D-backs situation to me is the last 2 years, now they had the plethora of picks in the early rounds this year in June. But if you look back at the last 2 years, and I mentioned in the first segment, I mentioned Pavin Smith, and I hope I'm saying his first name correctly. First round pick in 17, first baseman out of Virginia. They had him pegged when they drafted him. This could be the guy that replaces Paul Goldschmidt someday. He's in Double A. The scouting reports on him are not very positive. They're basically saying he's a below average defender. Not a great bat. My point is this. You're right. There isn't anything on the horizon for the D-backs in terms of prospects. And if they don't address the farm system, no matter where they are on the wild card race, the house could collapse on them in a couple of years.
No doubt. And that's why this year was such an important draft for them, because of the sheer numbers of picks they had in the first, you know, handful of rounds, especially the first two rounds. They had more picks than any other team in baseball. And it's one of those things where you are not going to bat 1,000 with your picks.
Sure.
You know, of all first round picks, only 60% make it to the big leagues. So that's, you know, these are first round picks that are supposed to be can't miss, and yet 40% never make it. And then there's another percentage of those first round picks that make it, but only play 1 or 2 years in the majors and really are considered busts. So it is an inexact science, but the more numbers you have, you figure that you're going to have a better percentage of getting those guys to the majors. But, you know, the guys they just drafted this season, we're looking at least 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, especially for the high school kids. That could very well be 4 or 5 years before you see them in Chase Field. And it's going to take patience. There's no doubt about it. And Ken Kendrick has never been anybody who's been a patient man.
You get a solid amen from me on that, and we both know that. He's a guy that wants to win now. Let me ask you about Alex Young, the D-backs pitcher who's had a great start to his big league tenure, left-hander. If you look at his numbers in the minors, Pedro, and I throw out AAA because Reno is an absolute bandbox, and a lot of Coast League ballparks are hitters' parks. He had a 6.09 ERA this year at AAA. The year before, splitting time between AA and AAA, an ERA of just above 5. But so far, in 4 appearances at the major league level, 0.96. What are you hearing? Is this just he's taking advantage of hitters don't know him right now?
Well, that's part of it, because let's not forget, he was not a big part of spring training. So everyone he's facing has never seen him before. You do have to wait for a little bit to come around. However, that doesn't mean that, you know, it's like you said, Pacific Coast League numbers aren't a measuring stick because of the high altitude of some ballparks, because of the small dimensions of some of the ballparks, that it's really difficult. That's where scouting comes in. And the fact that he's having success at this level, which is the highest level in the world, is a very positive sign. He's not going to have a 0.89 ERA for his career. Obviously, nobody has that. But I remember, you know, there was a young right-hander who came up in the A's system probably 15 years ago named Brad Ziegler, who finished his career right here.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe his first 30 innings in the bigs, he did not allow a run. And he was not a big-time prospect, but it's amazing what a run like that can do for your confidence and establish yourself and say, you know what? Maybe I can play at this level. Maybe this isn't my ceiling. This is my ceiling, the major league level, not AAA. And, you know, pitching is a need in every organization, but the Diamondbacks especially so, because, you know, we see the thinness of the pitching in this organization. So anybody that can come across and put up these kind of numbers is a positive sign. And hopefully for Alex, it lasts.
Let me get a thought from you, close it out, about what we expect to see overall in baseball before the deadline. And it does impact the D-backs in this respect. If I see one more story out of AZ Central that Zach Greinke's about to be traded, I'm going to scream at the top of the Chase Tower. But it tied in this way, just point blank. Madison Bumgarner's going to get traded, and Trevor Bauer is likely to get traded, right?
I would say yes and yes on both of those.
And you would figure
is the one that's a little the Indians. If the Indians continue to make a push, I don't know, but I would say likely yes.
Well, with Bumgarner, he's at the end of his deal. He's in a walk year, and
yep.
The Yankees they're very much in pursuit of pitching. And okay, so his numbers are not quite what they were in the World Series years, but this is a guy who has a lot of experience pitching in big games. And in a walk year, you kind of figure he's gonna summon something up he hasn't had the last couple of years if he gets dealt to a contender. So my point is this. Among all the other millions of reasons the D-backs will not trade Zach Greinke, there's the other one. The market, if you're a team looking for starting pitching right now, and you could get a Madison Bumgarner who walks at the end of the year, or a Trevor Bauer who is considerably cheaper, you're going there first before you even think about calling Mike Hazen.
Yeah, the counter argument to that is that because Greinke is still owed $35 million each of the next two seasons, if a team is willing to absorb more of that, I think if you're Mike Hazen, you've got to look at that and say, man, we can shed a lot of money here. And if a team is willing to, like I said, absorb that, you've got to listen. And I would say this, if Madison Bumgarner goes within the next few days, maybe a week or so, you could see other clubs say, okay, let's say he goes to the Yankees. Okay, the Yankees made their move. Now we've got to do something. If you're another contender saying that we've got a chance to do something. I wouldn't expect a team like the Twins to take on a Zach Greinke because they just would be caught in a similar situation as the D-backs where too much money is being eaten up by one player and they're not a large market club. But there certainly are clubs out there that might be willing to do that if the money is right. And that's, you know, the money you trade for prospects. It's you take more money, you get lesser type prospects. If the D-backs eat more money, then you might get better type prospects. So this is the game that's going to be played over the next 10, 11 days before that July 31st deadline.
It will be interesting to say the least. I meant what I said. I always enjoy our visits. Wish we had more time because it's always great to talk baseball with you, my friend. Stay cool out
Likewise.
There at the complex. And I'll see you
Likewise,
soon.
Likewise, Jeff.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, man. Take care.
Good to talk to you.
Take care.
Pedro Gomez, ESPN Baseball Insider, and he is filing reports from the Cardinals' rookie camp as Kyler Murray, among others, gets out there. Coming up, I want to talk a little bit about what I experienced last Tuesday in Las Vegas. And it is another example to me of some things that I've believed for a long time about the NBA. We'll talk about that coming up. Bill Gutekunst a little bit later on. Who's going where in local TV? We'll talk about all that coming up on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Sesmatch Show on a Thursday. Jeff Munn for Brad. You can find me in a variety of places. ASU women's basketball. We'll be doing football again in the fall. And we're adding a few little wrinkles to our pregame coverage. I don't think I'm allowed to say what they are yet, but it'll be a little bit different. Jordan Simone will be back. We're going to have all kinds of fun this fall. And we should have a lot of fun watching football out at Sun Devil Stadium. But I wanted to talk for a moment. Also, I'm Stadium Voice of Phoenix Rising FC. I work a whole bunch of different places. Just anything that where they'll hand me a check and it won't bounce. So there you go. Last Tuesday, my son and I just had a little father-son time in Las Vegas. First time he'd been up there. I used to take the kids to Las Vegas all the time, and people would say, you're taking them to Las Vegas. But we'd have so much fun riding a monorail, going to Circus Circus, the arcade at New York. They'd had a blast. Well, it was the first time he'd been up there since he turned 21. And one of the things he wanted to do, he's a hoop junkie, and he asked me if we could go to the Summer League. I said, sure. So online, I bought two tickets for Tuesday. The Suns are playing the Grizzlies at 4:30, and I thought it was a singular, you know, you buy a ticket, you go to a game. Stupid me. There's games every 2 hours. You can't move people in and out like that. But we went, and we watched two games, and I am telling you, it just boggled my mind for a couple of reasons. Eric, you guys ever been at the Summer League? You're wearing a G League Elite Camp shirt. Have you ever been to the Summer League?
I have not, believe it or not. I've been to so many different cool events, but I have never been to the Summer League.
It, you know, it's interesting because there is obviously there are years where it would get a lot of media attention. I think, well, DeAndre Ayton played in the Summer League last year. So Phoenix Media, I know a couple of, they broadcast a couple of games on radio up there last year. But here's the thing. There's two venues at UNLV, Thomas and Mack Center, the main basketball arena, and the Cox Pavilion, where the women's basketball team at UNLV plays most of the time. And there are five games a day, starting at noon in the Cox Pavilion, and they go every 2 hours, and then the Thomas and Mack schedule starts at 12:30. If you buy a ticket, and it's $35 for just a general admission ticket, and you can sit anywhere in the building, you can go at noon and watch basketball all day, go back and forth between the venues, and it's $35. So it's actually a pretty good deal.
When I first saw
the ticket, I went, oh, $35. But it's if you're a hoop junkie, it's nirvana. I mean, it's 10 hours of basketball every day. We were in Thomas and Mack, and we watched the Hawks play the Pacers and then the Suns and Grizzlies. I'm telling you, first of all, we took a lift over there. When we got there, there were ticket scalpers at the lift drop-off point. Got any tickets? And I'm thinking, it's the Summer League, and you're trying to scalp tickets? And then we got in there. Thomas and Mack seats, I think, about 15,000. And amazingly, it's an old building. It's about 40 years old. They have suites in there. And I'm thinking, boy, they were really ahead of the curve. But the other thing that just blew me away, Eric, 4,000 people were there easily. 4,000. The next game after Suns Grizzlies was Raptors Knicks, and it was filling up with people. And I sat there. I thought, this is unbelievable.
Branding.
To be very honest about it, and I don't want to be disparaging anybody, there really isn't anybody out there on the floor that you would think would make an immediate, significant impact. I know Zion Williamson played for the Pelicans, but I'll throw that out. The majority of players in that league are just trying to get the last spot on a roster. Grayson Allen played for the Grizzlies. That drove my son nuts. He's not a big Grayson Allen guy. But it just astounds me the way the NBA, a couple of years, it was 10 years ago, this thing was being played in front of 20 people. Maybe a game or two would get on television. Now the whole thing is on TV. The ESPN networks, NBA TV do it. Games are broadcast on radio on Sirius XM. I counted at least 30 media people watching the Suns and Grizzlies. This is unbelievable. How did they do this?
Have you ever seen a G League game in person?
I've watched, not in person, no.
It's good basketball.
And what you're watching essentially is
a G League basketball game, because a lot of those guys are probably going to be G League guys. I mean, Grayson Allen, I don't think, is going to play in the G League, but that's sort of the brand of basketball they play. It's up and down, and they're really good athletes, and it's, you know, there's a lot of college stars that are playing in the G League.
Yeah, and we were hoping to see Lugans Dort and Zylan Cheatham, and Zylan was with the Pelicans, and they played at 8:30 that night, and I forget what roster Lugans Dort was with.
Oklahoma City.
Yeah, and well, I think they didn't have a game scheduled that day. The thing, you're right, it's very up and down, wide open freewheeling basketball. But the other thing that gets me about the Summer League is it's very much like, in my mind, the Arizona Fall League with baseball. If you want to go out and, you know, and there's NBA front office people milling around all over the place, scouts, if you're a hoop junkie, it's tremendous to go to. And obviously the calendar plays into it. There is no other NBA basketball being played when the Summer League is going on. The Arizona Fall League, which has, I would say, a higher percentage of players in it that will be impact players in the major leagues, they still have real trouble getting four figures for attendance per game. Now, in the past, the league started a week after the regular season ended. So part of the reason you didn't get huge crowds is because baseball was in the middle of their postseason, and a lot of people were not they would rather stay home and watch the playoffs. Major League Baseball, this is also, I'm sure there's an explanation for this, but I can't figure out what it is. They have moved the start of the Arizona Fall League up to mid-September. Well, nobody's going to pay any attention to it. And it's astounding to me because the quality of baseball in the Fall League is exceptional. And you can identify guys at the Fall League and say they'll be in the major leagues next year. They will have significant roles with a major league team the following year. The other thing, and I know, Eric, you and I have talked about this in the past, and we had Ed Graney on a couple of years ago from the Review Journal, and he said at the time, Vegas has moved to the front of the line for either relocation or expansion. Now, I think it'd be more relocation at this point. I don't think the NBA should even ponder the subject of expansion. But watching what took place last Tuesday in Vegas confirms for me. And by the way, if you're a Seattleite and you're saying, wait a minute, I thought they were going to take care of us when we lost the Sonics. When the San Antonio team in the WNBA, this is according to Ed Graney of the Review Journal, when they had to move, MGM Resorts called the NBA and said, look, we'll take them. We'll take the team. We'll move it to Vegas. We'll have them play at Mandalay Bay. But here's what we want in return. We go to the front of the line for expansion or relocation. And they called, they didn't call somebody downstairs at the NBA. They called Adam Silver. And Adam Silver told them, okay, fine, you're first. Just, you know, we need you to take this team. I am more convinced than ever. And I don't want to speculate on what team might relocate in the next couple of years. It might be Memphis. But if there is a team that is going to move, they are moving to Las Vegas. And the reason is very simple. There are not a lot of people that are flying to Las Vegas to watch Summer League basketball. So that group of 4,000 fans, a lot of them were local. If they can get 3,000 people to come out and watch the Summer League in a college arena in July, imagine what the ticket demand would be for an NBA team playing at T-Mobile. Just think about it. And this also, very quickly, this also proves once again what a smart guy Gary Bettman is. If he had waited till the NBA got there to put an NHL team in Vegas, no one in Vegas would know they were there. Bill Gutekunst will discuss a lot of things with us next, including what's going on with these TV anchors. We'll discuss it next on the Brad Sesmet Show. Time once again for our weekly visit with AZ Central Gannett chief film and media critic Bill Gutekunst. I have no trivia to offer you this week, Goody. And I want to get right into what has been an interesting week, both nationally and locally in media. I'm going to start with local first. A couple of people we're accustomed to seeing. First of all, how are you, Bill?
I'm good. I'm in Brevard, North Carolina, actually.
Oh, how close is that to Winston-Salem?
It is about, it's a few hours. I've lived in Winston-Salem for 5 years, though.
I was just there last month. Loved it. We went up to Mount Airy and had
love
a...
Love it there.
Oh.
I know that you would appreciate this because
yes.
In Brevard, which is in the mountains of North Carolina near Asheville, a guy just jaywalked. And as he was jaywalking, as he ran across the street, he started yelling, "Citizens arrest! Citizens arrest!" And I thought of all people who would appreciate that.
Yeah, the Andy Griffith Show, Jim Nabors is Gomer Pyle. Citizens arrest! Citizens arrest! There's so many classic shows. And sometime I'll tell you about my experience in Mount Airy. We just had an absolute blast up there. Listen.
I love it there. I love the whole area.
Oh, it's terrific. James Quinones, you wrote about this, and James had been at Channel 12, I think, for about 9 years. Was their main weather guy for a number of years. And then I think he made the personal decision for family reasons to move to mornings. And I noticed about 3 or 4 weeks ago, gone. And you had the story over the weekend that he's no longer part of Channel 12. And I don't know if we've reached a conclusion on this. Was that his call or Channel 12's call?
It's hard to tell. I think it was his, but you never know. I asked him straight up. I said, did you fire him? And they said no. And he said, he has not been real eager to get back on any of this. And he just said he's no longer there. And, you know, thanks for the support and all that stuff. So I don't know. I mean, he was of all the, you know, I would say of the current crop of weather people, and obviously, you know, as well as anybody, the media has really changed. You don't.
Yeah.
You're probably not going to have another Dave Muncy type person that everybody knows, but of all of them, I'd say he's probably the best known.
Yeah, and I, Dave Muncy, Ed Phillips, going back into the 70s with Dewey Hopper, we knew our weather people a lot better. But that show, that morning show, to me, and I watch it every morning because I like watching the Today Show, so I tune in about 6:45. Emma Jade just left. She's going to spend more time with her family. And I, admittedly, and I hate to say this without him being here to defend himself, I'm not a big fan of Paul Gerke because I think a lot of times Paul reaches for the goofy line and he swings and misses. And he said some things on the air that offended me personally a few months ago about Tiger Woods. But that morning show, to me, morning shows in general, local TV news morning shows, really are trying to straddle a line between lightheartedness and having the ability to transition into reporting hard news. And that's a really tough thing to do.
It is. And by the way, they're taking their cue from the national shows. I mean, the Today Show, sure, Good Morning America shows. The thing with those shows, with the network shows, is there's a plan. I mean, it starts in the morning with hard news. When you wake up, if you want to, you know, that first hour tends to be hard news. By the time you get to the second, third hour, they're out there cooking on the plaza or whatever, you know. And that, right. But even for them, I think it's always been a hard line to straddle. And then when you have a big breaking story, and the most famous or infamous, of course, would be 9/11.
Right.
You know, you got to have. That's why it's so tricky, and I think that's something that people like Katie Couric were really good at, and probably didn't get enough credit for. She could go out there and cook on the plaza with the best of them. But when 9/11 happened, she was as good as any news anchor.
Agreed.
And she was, and I mean, I think that is a talent that is more rare than not.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Well, we wish James the best. I know he's had some challenges in his personal life with the loss of a spouse, and it's a tough business to be in, and we wish him nothing but the best. And then there is Carrie Lake, Channel 10 anchor. And look, I'm going to say this for the record. I had one encounter indirectly with Carrie Lake about 25 years ago, and it wasn't pleasant, and I'll just leave it at that. I don't know the woman. She said some things to my then-wife at the time when my wife was the PIO at St. Joseph's, and I didn't care for what she said to my wife when my wife was not giving her what she wanted, but we'll leave it at that. I don't really know Carrie Lake. But this week, some video surfaced of they were going on Facebook Live. Cameras were rolling. They were on live on Facebook. Obviously, they were not aware of it. And Channel 10 had asked Carrie Lake to back off a extreme right-wing website that she was posting on. And I'm going into the whole story myself. But essentially, she said some disparaging things about Phoenix New Times, who might, you know, have some might go after her if they knew that she was on this right wing website. And she used a word that you're not supposed to use on television to describe New Times. And by the way, if she thought New Times was after her before, wait until she sees what's coming next. But this gets into an interesting question, Bill. Where is the line? She's a private citizen when she's not on television, but the first lesson I learned in college from a media professor was you're on duty all the time.
Yes, especially if you're high profile. And I'll tell you this, nothing is more high profile than TV. I've worked at the Republic for however many years, a long time, and I've always had pretty high profile jobs. And every now and then somebody would say, oh, you're Bill Bittycombs or whatever. Then I started doing a weekly thing on Channel 12 about, you know, 1 minute of movie of the week or something like that. And it was like I just started, and everybody was like, hey, I saw you on TV.
Yeah.
I mean, TV, you're magnified. And I think you're right. I mean, I think you always have to kind of be on guard. Now, look, don't get me wrong. And I've had this debate with people before, too. Reporters are citizens, just like everybody else. They should vote. They should participate in democracy as they see fit on whatever side they want to be on. That is not a problem. The problem is when you publicly start doing it and you publicly start taking sides. And then you got to come back and report it. I think that the problem with her, if it had just been the word she said, it just would have been funny.
Right.
You know, it would not funny for her.
No, I know what you mean.
But there's a million of those. You know, there's a million of those clips of people. You can go on YouTube and watch 25 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
The problem with her is this website and her just dogged defense of it. And she said some stuff on the air as a reporter, but not as a reporter. She's not a reporter. But as a personality, she said some stuff on the air that was you know, pretty, I don't know what else to say, pretty bad. I mean, she, the stuff about, you know, the whole thing of the tax was going to be just, you know, this is a marijuana thing. And all
yeah.
And it's, I don't know. I mean, maybe she's gunning for a network job with Fox. I don't know. I don't know what, if anything, they will do with her or to her or about her. Maybe nothing. Maybe they'll just let it blow over. And I do know that I was on vacation. My first day of vacation just happened, so somebody else had to write about it. It's like, great. But but I noticed that when we posted the story on Facebook, it got a ton of responses immediately, and a surprising number of them were like, good for her.
Yeah, and Ed Montini wrote a column basically to that point, that she may have picked up a whole bunch of new supporters out of all this.
And that's a problem, because she doesn't, you know what, you can have, I mean, you've been a big name in local media for a million years, and there are a lot of people who love you. I'm sure there are people who haven't, who don't, you know, and that's part of it. But that isn't, that's not your job to court fans. Your job is to do your
no,
job.
No, exactly.
You do it well, and people like you. You do it well, people like you. You're never going to get everybody to like you, because that's the way it is. But she doesn't need to be courting these right-wing types, and nobody needs to be courting the left-wing types. I mean, just do your stupid job, and be it. Go vote for Trump if you want to vote for Trump. Vote for whoever you want to vote for. I mean, but you don't campaign. I mean, it's,
right.
You're not an arm of the campaign. You still have to report on it. I have a friend, James Poniewozik, who's the TV critic for the New York Times. I think he's the best critic of any kind right now writing. And he has this. He's written this thing before, where he said he tells people. He writes, as I do, a lot about media and politics and stuff. But he tells you right up front who he voted for. And he said, so that there's no secrets. He said that I'm not supporting them. I'm not campaigning for them. I certainly don't contribute to their campaign anyway. It's just my vote as a citizen. And now you know. And we'll go from there. And you can judge for yourself whether I am able to cover this stuff objectively. And I think that's not a bad idea.
I hate to do this. We've got about a minute. But at the end of the month, they're going to go through another round of debates. And I was on a radio station last week, and I made the comment that I really want moderators with a backbone this time instead of people that are just going to let it run amok. And I joked. I said they ought to call Major League Baseball and get an umpire to come in and moderate the debate, because at least those guys will try to follow the rules and they'll throw out anybody that doesn't agree with them. But in all seriousness, you know, I want to see what your reaction to this. If CNN's going to do these debates, they're going to use three moderators. What they ought to do, in my opinion, they should get Anna Navarro to moderate those debates. Because I'm telling you, I'm not joking about this. You get on Anna Navarro's bad side and you don't do what she tells you to do, you're in big, big trouble. She doesn't take any trash from anybody. And that's all I want, Bill. I just want these the debaters, whether it's 10, 20, 5, I don't care. These are the rules. Follow the rules. When your time's up, shut up.
Yeah, but that's always been the case. And that's the case in every presidential debate ever, probably. I mean, maybe not Nixon and Kennedy or something, but they all do it. It's just exacerbated when there's 20 of them.
Right.
Especially the lower-rung candidates, they're desperate for time. And that's why they do it. I think it's a numbers problem. I don't think they're ever going to be able to completely get people to follow the rules. And my favorite also is, well, you know what? Before I answer your question, I want to go back to the one before.
Right. I can't stand that. I can't stand that.
Because they're not debates. Let's call them what they are. They're little speeches. I mean,
right. Or it turns into the Jerry Springer show where Kamala Harris has to tell him America doesn't want to see us have a food fight. It's just nuts. Enjoy your vacation. We'll chat sometime about Mount Airy, and I'll catch up with you again soon, Bill. Thanks very much.
All right.
Good to talk to you. Bill Gutekunst, AZ Central, Gannett Chief Film and Media Critic, joining us. What a great show. Lots to talk about. And I love coming in here and doing that with you, with Eric, the whole gang behind the glass. Derek, we enjoy this so much. Now, stay here. Sports360AZ.com. You get the latest on sports news, local. And especially high school football's cranking up. So you want to find out what's going on with your local high school football team, this is the place to do it. And we hope you'll join us again for another edition of the Brad Sesmatch Show.